Hello, all of you out there in Radio Land. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your device is locked onto our website, kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the unique personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington, so special. The COVID crisis has changed our lives so very much. Our radio station itself is a whole new world. With an abundance of caution, most of us cannot even use our studio equipment to record shows. Individual DJs can creep into the studio and do their shows in solitary confinement. But those of us who have real live guests on their shows are not able to invite them to the studio to record. Needless to say, that changes the game. We do have a technological workaround where we create and record the show without even visiting KPTZ's world headquarters in a sweet little trailer in the parking lot of the Mountain View School. Admittedly, our audio quality is not up to our usual standards, but the show must go on. So please bear with us if the sound quality isn't quite what we usually deliver. Consider the content. The purpose of Our Town is to share the stories of some of the fascinating people who make up our community. But the show is only a half hour long, definitely not long enough to do justice to some of our fellow citizens. So it's a synopsis. We try to get our guests to talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the northwestern edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca, right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and baristas, the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otter, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. The past few months have brought some remarkable changes to our lives. Now, more than ever, don't you wonder about the people you see around you? Who was that tall guy at Don's Pharmacy? He was absorbed in reading the boxes on As Seen on TV section. He didn't even see me. And what about those two silver-haired ladies marching up Morgan Hill? What were they talking about? It's hard to lip read through a mask. Anyhow, we know that the masked people you see everywhere are probably fine, upstanding citizens. After all, wearing a mask is now a symbol of civic responsibility. But we are all becoming more isolated as the quarantine drags on. This show, Our Town, is designed to help you get to know some of the fascinating people who live and work on the Olympic Peninsula. My guest today is Carolyn Salmon. She's the president of the Members Association at Quimper Village. That village is a unique place. It's a senior co-housing development, which was conceptualized, designed, and built by a group of local seniors who felt that there just wasn't the right sort of housing here in Port Townsend. They found a 6-acre site just north of the golf course, but I'm getting ahead of the story. I usually start more with a welcome. Welcome, Carolyn. Let's start at the beginning. Were you born and bred in Jefferson County?
No, I was born and grew up in a smallish town in Kansas.
Did you attend high school in Kansas?
I did attend high school in Kansas and also the University of Kansas.
I'm always interested in people's high school years. What I really am interested in is not so much what you thought about yourself, but what your peers thought about you. You know, they all lump kids, their classmates, into little groups like, you know, he's a nerd, he's a jock, she's a jock, she's a band geek, whatever. What do you think where would they pigeonhole you?
Oh, my. I think they figured out that I was a pretty serious person. And when they wanted someone who could organize and get something done, like plan the food for the junior girls' retreat, that was the kind of thing I got to end up doing.
Okay. And did you have it in mind from the beginning that you would go to college? And did you have a path clearly outlined? Most kids don't, but a few do.
Yes, it was just a given in my family that all of the kids would go on to higher education of one kind or another. In my case, I considered a girls' college in Colorado, but got for thinking about it, got a scholarship at the University of Kansas, and that's where I went.
What did you major in?
I majored in bacteriology. Ended up with a degree in bacteriology and a certificate as a medical technologist.
Really? What inspired you to do that?
I'd always been interested in science and in the medical field. Although I considered going to medical school, I decided that that was probably too much of a reach. In retrospect, that may have been wrong, but that's what happened. So I took the path that I did.
Where did you start out with job-wise?
Job-wise, I had gotten my medical technology certificate in New Haven, Connecticut. He was got his master's at Yale. And we went back to the University of Kansas. And I went to work in the microbiology department in bacteriology research and ended up spending 12 years of my life in research of one kind or another. Towards the end of that, I decided I needed to do something bigger in the world, and I got an MBA, and that sort of changed my career path.
To what? What did you do next?
By then, we were living in Pensacola, Florida, and I became a certified financial planner and did that for several years. Finally ended up working for the Florida Department of Environmental Protection in air pollution control. I did what we called compliance and enforcement work.
Can you give an example of the sort of case you might be involved in?
Looking at something very local, which would think about it, we regulated power plants and paper mills and so on. So, for instance, if the paper mill had emitted more particulate matter, i.e. smoke, than they were allowed to, we would take for enforcement action against them to ensure that they were doing the things they needed to do to prevent that, and also to, of course, collect a penalty, financial penalty. That's just one example.
Okay, so the financial penalties, are there ever any more extreme penalties, like shutting down people?
That can happen. Our program that I was in, we enforced the federal regulations relating to asbestos removal and disposal. And in one case, a contractor ended up going to jail for failing to properly dispose of asbestos waste.
Wow.
That was a case of mine.
Wow. So let me just get this straight. So you graduated with a degree in microbiology and you did research for 12 years, and that was all geographically, I'm getting confused. You went to New England, Connecticut.
I'm confused too. Let me think. First at the University of Kansas, and then in Virginia, at Virginia Tech.
Okay.
In Blacksburg, Virginia.
You got your MBA in Virginia?
And I got my MBA, and about that time we moved to Florida.
Okay, and you became a financial planner?
And I became a certified financial planner.
And did you stick with that?
I was in that field for about 10 years. After working for a couple of very small companies, I decided that I liked the planning. I didn't like going out and prospecting for clients. It was just really hard for me. So I decided that I needed to find something else to do. And that's when I went to work for the Florida Department of Environmental Protection.
And how long were you with them?
I was with them for 15 years.
Along the way, you had a couple of kids, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we have a daughter and a son.
And what are they doing these days?
Well, our daughter is retired, and our son, who lives in Florida, is a sales representative for a company that primarily sells cheese and gourmet food items to high-end purveyors.
Yum, yum. Does he send you care packages regularly?
Once in a while.
That sounds good. That sounds excellent. But how did you end up in the Pacific Northwest?
Well, Jack and I discovered the Pacific Northwest when we lived in Spokane for 4 years in the late 60s. We liked it so much out here that we kept coming back on vacation. So when we retired in Florida, we decided we did not want to stay in Florida for retirement. We went on the road for 5 years in a motorhome and traveled full time. We kept coming back to the Northwest. And when it was time for us to settle down, we decided that Port Townsend was a really good place for us. And it has been.
Wow. 5 years on the road.
Yep.
That's a long time.
It was.
Were there any runners up in terms of other places that you discovered that you thought you might like?
Well, we liked Southwest North Carolina, down around Asheville. There's mountains down there, and there are a lot of things that we liked about that area. But let's say the Northwest won out, and we're glad we're here.
Okay. You're listening to KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. This show is called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. Our Town profiles some of the amazing people who live and work on the Olympic Peninsula. Today, my guest, Carolyn Salmon, president of the Quimper Village here in Port Townsend. She was telling me about her varied career. She had at least three or four different, very diverse career paths. But when it came time to settle down, they picked Port Townsend. So this was really thought out. What attracted you to Port Townsend?
Well, first, the mountains and the water. Second, the size of the community and the kinds of activities that go on here, the arts community, the cultural life in general. That it is a politically liberal community. Having lived in Florida and in Virginia and even Spokane, we felt like we'd put in our time living in very conservative areas. And it was time to be in a place where we were really comfortable, where we weren't the standouts as liberals.
Okay. And did you rent for a while or did you buy a house? What'd you do?
We bought a house at Cape George and lived there for about 13 years, 14 years.
Well, that's a beautiful spot, really.
It was.
Well, how did you go from living in Cape George to being part of the group that started Quimper Village?
I used to stand at my window and look out towards the Straits and Protection Island and to the north, the islands, and it was a beautiful view. And I'd watch my neighbors' cars back out of their driveways, their garages, and drive away and come back and drive back in their garages and never see my neighbors. And I began to feel like this was going to be an awfully isolated life when I could no longer get in my car or wanted to get in my car a couple of times a day and drive into town to do something where I could be interacting with people. So I was ready for the place to live where I had real neighbors. A good friend of mine, Pat Hunhausen, and her husband, David, had realized that they could no longer live in the two-story home that they had, quite a lovely house, because of health problems. And Pat started looking around for some options. And she, too, wanted close neighbors. And she discovered senior co-housing. She began to talk about this with a group of friends, and eventually she and David did a presentation at Quimper Unitarian Universalist Fellowship about aging successfully, and let's talk about getting older. And from that, she offered to facilitate a 10-session workshop called Aging Successfully, Senior Co-Housing. My husband and I participated in that workshop, and it seemed to us it was going to meet our needs.
Okay, well, I think a lot of our listeners probably aren't even familiar with the term co-housing. Can you explain the concept?
Sure. The concept is that a group of people get together initially and design and build as a group a community that is designed for living comfortably close together and being able to support each other, but building homes that meet their specific kinds of needs. The emphasis is on the people community. Our community is owned and managed by the people who live here. We make the decisions about how we will live together, what we will do together. In that process, we have developed the things that we do to help and support each other in day-to-day living as we get older.
Okay. Obviously, we're going to have to talk about pre-pandemic and post-pandemic. Yes. In terms of the concept. So let's start with just sort of the nitty-gritty. I know you have a 6-acre site. How many houses or townhouses did you build?
We built 28 townhouses on our 6 acres. We have kind of a funny shaped piece of land. It's kind of like a panhandle, if you're familiar with that, if you think about Oklahoma. And the Panhandle comes down and connects to F Street. And we had to build a street coming into the broad part of the pan part of our site where we have our homes and a variety of commonly owned facilities or structures, such as our common house, workshop, art studio that are available to all of our members.
When was that? 2017 was when
it we moved opened? In beginning the end of October 2017. It okay. took us a little bit over 3 years to get from the beginning to move-in date.
Initially, what did the units cost? I know they vary in size.
We have 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom units that are 910 square feet. Initially, they cost right around $300,000, depending on what kind of flooring you put in or appliances. You had a few options for things, but right. we used what's called production construction. We tried to make each unit as uniform as possible to minimize or control the costs. And you could customize your own home interior once you got in, depending on what your choices are. So that initial one was about $300,000. The most recent sale of one of those units in late 2020 was $350,000. We have a 2-bedroom, 2-bathroom unit, which initially was right at $400,000. The most recent sale in 2019 was $450,000. And our large units, 3-bedroom, 2 baths. Most people are using that third bedroom like I do as a study in this case, or as a crafts room or a variety of other things. But anyway, those initially cost right at $440,000. And the most recent sale in last August was $488,000. So they have increased in value pretty much the same rate as other housing in Port Townsend.
Right. The market has been climbing steadily.
Yes, it has.
For a number of reasons. In terms of the structure, the units are individually owned, correct?
Yes.
Now, is there something which is usually called an HOA?
Yes. We have condominium ownership, so we have a condominium owners association. All of our members are on the board, are board members of the association. Ordinarily, if you're in a condominium or a homeowners association, everybody who owns property is a member of the association. And then you elect a board who makes the decisions on what happens to those things that they have to make decisions about. And so you would have a 5 or 6 or 7, 8 person board. But in our case, every owner is a member of the board. So we have 40 members of the board for our condominium association.
So what's the range in dues?
These are assessments, and what they are is going to depend on the kinds of things that the owners association has to pay for. We have pretty extensive common property. We have our common house, which is a 3,000 square foot building that has a large meeting / dining room. We have a full kitchen and also a sitting room, 2 guest rooms with a shared bath, and we have a small apartment in the common house. So it's fairly extensive. We also have an art studio, a workshop, and a storage building. So everybody has a 5x5 storage space outside of their home. And as you pointed out, we have 6 acres of land to manage and maintain. Right. So our assessments are about $450 a month with variation based on the size of your unit, because you also, you know, the owners association owns the exteriors of the buildings. You own the interior, the association owns the exterior.
Right. And what about parking?
Our parking, we have 18 garages and 3 carports, and we have a large parking lot and some other outside parking. So we asked the city to let us have less than the usual required a number of parking spaces, which I think is 2 parking spaces per unit. We ended up with 1.2 because we do have shared vehicle and we give our neighbors rides so that we don't need as many cars. And there are not very many of us who have 2 vehicles.
pre-pandemic, can you just sort of run through some of the common activities you might have had?
Well, our most important was what we called common house dinners. Two or three nights a week, a small team of members, and the teams change every meal, prepares the dinner for all the members who want to come to dinner that particular night. So we were averaging 25 up to sometimes 35 people for dinner on a night. And this was a really important part of our community life, where you sit down together and have a meal prepared by some of your neighbors. Or you've helped prepare the meal which you serve to some of our neighbors. So that is probably our very biggest loss in our community life. But we've tried to replace that with frequent outdoor activities that give us an opportunity to stand in a safe distance wearing our masks and enjoy each company. You know, we moved the Tai Chi classes and yoga classes from inside to outside. We have a Friday night social hour around our propane fire pit. A couple of times a month, a couple of members will prepare a meal and deliver it to your front door if you wanted to get it. These are all things that we've done to try to maintain community.
A number of friends who live in condo report that the rules are quite aggravating. Like one of my friends who has a condo on Bainbridge, she got a chair for her deck and she was informed that she couldn't have it because it was the wrong color. And so
I've heard about that sort of thing.
Yeah. Do you have equal things like that? I mean,
no.
Okay. What about pets? Pets are always an issue.
Pets are always an issue. One of the first things that the pet owners here did before we moved in, they built a temporary dog run. And subsequently, we hired a man to come in and build a permanent dog run, which is a large area fenced in where the dogs can go and play. They are on leashes. And this applies to cats as well. If you have a cat that needs to or likes to go outside, we have one member who puts the harness on her big fat cat and they go for a walk. And it works.
But is there a limit on the number of pets you can have?
There is. We finally concluded that two pets per household was adequate.
Okay.
And this hasn't been a problem.
So what do you see as the benefit of living in co-housing?
Having neighbors. And knowing each other well and being able to share life with each other and being able to celebrate together and being able to grieve together. I was just thinking, one of my neighbors, she has a good-sized dog and the dog pulled her down and she broke her wrist. So she hasn't been able to be out much at all lately, but she had a birthday this week. Well, birthday at 4:00, 15 of us were outside spaced around their unit, and we sang happy birthday to her and delivered homemade cupcakes. So, you know, in pre-pandemic days, we would have done this at dinner in the common house. But since we don't have, you know, we can't do that.
Yeah,
we
things
find a way around
different.
It.
So what happens when someone decides to move out for whatever reason or there's a death? What about the sale? How does that?
We have a team called the resale team, which will work with them to find hopefully more than one potential buyer for their home. And we help them find people who are interested in co-housing and who understand what it's all about, understand the benefits, but also the responsibilities, because there are responsibilities. We are responsible to each other for working together, for taking part in what needs to be done, making decisions for the benefit of the community. So far, we've been very, very fortunate in the resales that we've had, that the people who've moved in have been a good fit, and we think, it turns out, they seem to think we're a good fit for them. And so that's very important for the future of our community.
But there's a priority on it being seniors who come or over 55.
Yes, we opted to have that as part of our requirements, but we under the Fair Housing for Older People Act.
Okay. And I understand there are two other co-housing projects in Port Townsend. What are those?
Rosewind, which was the first one, I understand. And it is off of San Juan to the west of San Juan in the generally the Umatilla area. And their model is single family homes around a large open area. And they've been here, I think, about 20, well, more than 20 years now. And Port Townsend Eco Village, which is also off of San Juan, north of Rosewind. And their emphasis is on sustainable living, and they have extensive gardens and beehives. I think they may have some chickens.
You have 28 units. Do the other two have larger or smaller communities, as far as you know?
I think the Eco Village is significantly smaller than we are. And they are intergenerational. Across the country, many of the intergenerational communities are finding that they are, by default, becoming senior communities. People moved in with their families, their children grew up and moved away. The parents didn't plan to move away. They like where they live, and so they're still there. And the homes are not being rotated to younger families coming in. So this is information I've picked up in attending co-housing community conferences and things that...
Yeah, well, the other thing that has happened in this town and many others is the cost of housing has gone up, up and away.
Yes.
And many younger families can't afford it.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
The prices you were mentioning for your units are not cheap, let's put it that way.
No, they were market rate. And,
yes.
And that's what it cost to build. In Port Townsend, our contractor who came from Bainbridge told us that they estimated it cost us 10% more than to build this community than if they had built it on Bainbridge Island or in Kitsap County. It just is more expensive because we don't have all of the labor contractors in the area that would to meet all of the needs, and hauling materials out here is more expensive. So that's just a given for Port Townsend. But yeah, housing for families is a really big issue, and it's one that that we look at from our perspective of having built the largest development in 8 years in Port Townsend. How do you get this done?
You stuck to it. You were determined. Okay, well, listen, I have a zillion more questions, but unfortunately, our producer tells me we're out of time. I want to thank you for being a guest on the show. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today has been Carolyn Salmon, president of the Quimper Village Association, Port Townsend's latest co-housing project. In addition to thanking Carolyn, I want to thank my partner, John McPherson, the editor and producer of Our Town. Thank you, the listener. KPTZ 91.9, Port Townsend, is a community radio station. Everyone who works here is a volunteer. We give our time because we believe Jefferson County needs a free local voice. We need you, dear listener. We need more volunteers. We also need more donations to stay afloat. We've got bills just like you. So listeners, stay safe and stay healthy. I'm signing off for today, but please keep listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.